The regular and supplemental meetings are called to order. We're going to recess the supplemental meeting. We'll start off with a moment of silence for those who are not with us anymore. Thank you. First item are the minutes from the November meeting. Do we have any comments and questions? If not, can we have a motion to approve?
Motion for the minute.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Public, would anyone like to speak? We don't have anyone physically here. Is there anyone online on the phone that wants to say anything?
I press 5-star on my phone. I'll unmute them.
All right, thank you. Now we're going to move to item number C9, AEW, portfolio update.
Okay, it sounds like we have Ron, Mark, and Sheriff from AEW on the line, on the phone. AEW has managed a real estate portfolio for us that they took over in 2015. It's currently at $124 million. They plan to update you guys on some changes to the team managing that portfolio. So we don't plan to dive into any of the details on the portfolio, just give you guys an update. AEW will be back to the board sometime in the spring to do a full portfolio update and discuss plans on the property. So with that, I will hand it over, I guess, first to Ron.
Thanks, Ryan. Good morning, everybody. And thanks for taking the time this morning. Appreciate it. As Ryan just mentioned, I'm joined by Mark Morrison and Sarah Cassidy. Sorry, there's a major echo here, so it's a little tough to talk. Mark has been working on this assignment since the start, and he will be stepping in as senior portfolio manager upon my pending retirement after 32 years at AEW. Sarah Cassidy is a managing director and head of portfolio management at AEW, and she will be stepping on.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but there is a very serious echo that is. It's really hard to hear.
Yeah, Ron, we're going to try to figure out these audio issues as I'm echoing to it here, but just give us a minute. Ron, go ahead and we'll see if that's any better.
Okay. Okay, there we go. I don't hear the echo anymore. Sorry, it was a little disturbing. So as I was saying, I'm joined today by Mark Morrison, who has been the assistant portfolio manager with me since the start of our involvement here, and Sarah Cassidy, who is a managing director at AEW, heads up our portfolio management group, and is also the co-portfolio manager for AEW's core property fund, which is a $8.5 billion diversified open-ended fund invested across the U.S., and Sarah has agreed to take my place on the management committee for Red Consolidated Holdings, which is the remaining part of the portfolio that we oversee for Dallas Police and Fire. We started this back in 2015 with three investments, a restaurant group, a land holding in Phoenix called Camel Square, and Red Consolidated Holdings with RCH, I'll call it, being the largest of the three investments. The restaurant group investment was completed and closed out back in 2017. I'm pleased to report that Camel Square is now complete. We got our final COOs in the last several weeks. All project work is done. Warranties are burned off, and we're now liquidating two entities, but that second assignment is now done and successfully so. And we are in the what I'll call the final stages, final innings, if you will, of our recap of Red Consolidated Holdings. Several assets are in the letter of intent or purchase and sale stage. We just completed some additional land sales. We're making a further loan repayment to Dallas Police and Fire in the next week or so. And then we have several assets that we're preparing for sale in the next several months. So
can we hold up for a number?
Yep, please.
Pause for a minute.
Yeah, I lost the phone line here.
Sorry, Ron.
No problem.
John's just fixing the phone line. Okay, Ron, we're ready to go. Thank you.
Okay. Can everyone? I'm assuming everyone can hear me.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure I need to repeat any of the stuff I just said. So.
I think we heard you.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Good. So just quickly in round numbers, we peaked at an NAV net asset value of just below $338 million back in, I believe it was 2018-19. That is now, as Ryan just said, down to about $124 million. And over that time, we've distributed something in the order of over $290 million to Dallas Police and Fire. If you do the math, you'll see that the number is actually higher than just simply doing the subtraction of the current NAV from where we were. And that's because we actually made some returns on a couple of good investments here, namely Camel Square and the Union. So with all that, I just want to first of all, thank everyone for their patience with me over the years. Mention that Mark Morrison has been involved in this investment every step of the way, notably working on all the valuation procedures and processes we put in place on going on 10 years ago, as well as understanding all the complexities of the various loans and different investments that were included in the portfolio. So I'm very pleased to be handing the reins over to Mark, and I'm especially pleased to have Sarah coming on the management committee. I've been working with Sarah since she came to AEW back in 2018. The Core Property Fund has been a very important fund for both AEW, but more importantly, our clients. And Sarah also heads up portfolio management for AEW and is a member of our investment committee, which means that she has been involved in our internal biannual risk management committee meetings with regards to Dallas Police and Fire. So no secret, when I come to see you in the past, typically in April, we have a internal risk management committee meeting prior to that to review all the activity in the portfolio and what the key issues are and the steps moving forward. So Mark and Sarah, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to add to that, but I'm just pleased to have, first of all, had the opportunity to work with Dallas Police and Fire over the years, particularly this board and with staff. It's been an incredible experience, I think, for all of us in many ways, but I've really been honored and privileged to have had that opportunity. So, Mark or Sarah, if you've got anything you'd like to add, put the mic down and shut up for a second.
Thank you, Ron. Board, this is Mark Morrison. It's been a few years since I've been out there, but look forward to coming out and working with staff as we continue to work through the RCH investment and focus on the 2025 business plan, which we'll be presenting to you, I think Ryan mentioned, sometime in the first half of this year.
And thank you. This is Sarah Cassidy. I just want to reiterate the depth and expertise of the AEW platform and our team. We are very familiar with transitions, and we are going to very much miss Ron, and we do wish him the very best on his next chapter. But we do have the infrastructure and continuity here to make the transition seamless, And I'm personally looking forward to working with the team more directly and obviously seeing you in the spring at the next meeting. So we obviously appreciate the opportunity and, as I'm sure you do as well, very much wish Ron the best.
So I'll just add to that and then the board members can ask questions or whatever that I think we've said before and I've said to the AEW team, one of the best decisions we've made was hiring AEW. And I don't know how we would have unraveled the complex portfolio that they took over without AEW. So I personally like to thank Ron for sticking through this quagmire that basically they handled. I really appreciate everything you've done, and we have a lot of confidence in Mark going forward.
Ron, this is Tina Hernandez. I just wanted to thank you. Hey, how are you?
I'm good.
I didn't realize you were retiring. I just wanted to thank you for being a trustee that came on early on. You were very good about like handling these properties and telling us backstory and the plan. And so you were probably more in the trenches with Kelly, but I appreciate it as the board of you coming here and the decisions you made to especially in Camelback. I mean, there's some things that you just as an organization that you did to help us, and I do really appreciate that. And I do really appreciate how you kind of handled the board as well in telling and basically educating us in some of these areas. So I do really, really appreciate you and the last 7 years or so. So thank you very much, and you did a phenomenal job.
Thank you, Tina. I really appreciate that.
This is Nick Merrick. I echo the same. So job well done.
All right, guys. Well,
thanks, Nick. I'm going to miss you all, honestly. I'm sitting back in my chair. Yeah, well, you know, we've had quite an adventure, haven't we? I remember several meetings walking out saying it's rare you get to talk about a transaction not happening that triggers a door closing that triggers a dog barking in the distance. So when we got involved, there's so many different things that are so tied together, and you know, it's just very difficult to untangle everything. But that required a tremendous amount of patience and fortitude by staff and by the board, given all the changes that took place early on. So I can't be prouder of what you all have accomplished, and can't be proud of having the opportunity to work with you.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, everyone. AEW, we'll see you guys in spring and look forward to moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay, now we opt to C1.
Okay, I have just an update on the 2.025 process for you today. We haven't had any further conversations with the City of Dallas for many months now. The city did start paying contributions based on the plan adopted by the city on December, with the December 6th payroll. They also sent another wire to do some of the catch-up, again, based on their plan, not our plan. We're in the process of trying to reconcile those numbers. They don't seem to have a report that we can use to reconcile those numbers, so we're working through it with the city. I need to reach out to the CFO, see if we can. It's going to have a report.
So let me get a question just from a layman's point of view. So you're saying we're getting money from the city, but it's not quite clear that it's not our plan, it's their plan, and it's still arbitrary, the number that they're giving, even based on their plan.
I wouldn't call it arbitrary. I would say that we've got a spreadsheet with some numbers on it. I just need some source documents to tie the pensionable payroll amount to, and right now they're telling us they don't have that ties to that, which makes no sense to me because they're paying all the employees and they're making employee contributions. The staff doesn't seem to be able to find that report, and I know one of the numbers is clearly wrong.
Okay, so can you tell me what the magnitude of that number is when you take out benefits? Like, what's the nominal number? when you consider all benefits. So we, before they would just pay us for benefits, we're talking about monies that would go to the unfunded liability on a nominal basis. What is that?
So prior to them starting to pay, they were about $2 million short on under the city's adopted plan and about $4 million short on our adopted plan for fiscal year 2025. In addition to that, they still owe us $3.4 million for fiscal 2024. That's not a part of this wire, but we're working through all of that. And I plan to have a new page to the contribution report where we are tracking any outstanding amounts owed from the city. So I don't think it's
arbitrary. Will you give that to them as well?
I can. Sure. But I think it's progress. We're not all the way there yet, but I do think it's progress.
Because in this collaborative way that we think and they think, if they don't understand it, we think that they're at a deficit and we're showing them. I think that's kind of what we should be doing. So they don't say, well, you never said anything.
I think they know.
I think they know, but it's proof
they'll play the game.
Yeah, they'll play that game.
We can talk more about that later.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. The other thing is the PRB, under Section 2.025, the PRB had a deadline of December 1st to report to the legislature the action that the board took and the report from the independent actuary. They did do that by the deadline. And the way they did that is they put it in there. They do a big report to the legislature every 2 years. So the link to that report, it's about a 600-page report, is provided on the slide here for you if you want to look at it. Basically, what they included was the Chiron final report, which you've all seen, basically a two-page document that says this is the DPSP adopted this plan. Oh, by the way, also the city adopted a plan. So they included the minutes from our plan and our plan. And then they included everything that the city sent them on their plan, which was 118 pages of this 600-page report. So all that's in there as well. But you can see it all if you click on that. Nothing surprising there. They didn't say one plan's better than the other. That wasn't their role. But so they've met what they need to do for the statute. And we will talk a little more about the 2.025 loss when we get to the legal stuff. Any questions on where we are? The only things on the upcoming calendar are the beginning of the legislative session, which is coming up quickly. Last day to file bills is March 14th, and then the session ends in June.
Just out of curiosity, along those timelines, what council is also going through an election? Is that May?
Okay. Professional Services Committee.
Yes. Excuse me, everybody. This is Steve Hyde. I'm a little under the weather. We met with Chuck Campbell from Jackson Walker last Friday, December 6th. On that call were myself, Marcus, Mark, and Tag. The feedback that we got from Chuck was, I would say, extremely positive in regards to just the professionalism and also just the knowledge of the staff of working with Kelly and Josh. And he really commented on compared to other clients, just how much more technical and well-versed that we are from just understanding the components of the pension, the legal matters, and just the forward thinking that we have as a staff. And it was just very complimentary, and kudos to Kelly and Josh from the feedback that Chuck gave us for what you all do. Mark, Marcus, Tag, do you guys want to add anything to that?
No, I think that encompasses it.
Do we need a motion on that?
No. Why? So are we just continuing with is that it? Okay.
Yeah.
Are you okay with that, Mark? Because, Mark, you also have seemed like you always wanted a vetting situation where you wanted other entities to come into play. And I'm glad that you were on that committee.
Yeah, and the charge of that committee was just to review. So it wasn't to suggest, whether there be any changes. So.
Okay. Fair enough.
We can talk about that. I didn't remember if it was last year or the year before. And Chuck Campbell actually wrote the 2017 changes to our plan.
Oh, really?
And we talked about keeping, not that we want to make any changes, but really it was important to keep this session in case we need legislative changes. So that's where we are.
Okay. Um,
So this is the report that you see every month with the benefits-related actions. What I wanted to point out was that retirements are down 20% from in 2024 over 2023. It was 144 last year and 114 this year. My guess is that's just a timing thing on when they did the hiring, but I think that's good news that people didn't get nervous and run for retirement this year. Any questions about this report? Okay. The contribution report is next. There's nothing unusual in this report. They are exceeding their hiring plan by 131 employees. The contributions exceeded the floor as they have for maybe all of this year. And this report will continue in this format until we get through, well, probably actually this might be the rule. I don't know what I'm going to do with the transition. I was thinking it was going to go through December. But now that they've started paying based on October 1, we'll see what happens. Might be more interesting.
Be exciting.
Yeah.
What about the addition of police? I mean, have any of that been discussed any? Or?
I mean, we'd love for them to do more hiring, and it looks like they're working really hard on how successful that is. I mean, they come in and they some of them make it through, and some of, you know, people naturally retire. It's hard to get those numbers up.
Change and the top part is the number of employees that you're in, the second to the last column. And you can see the last year was more than it had been, but it's really tough to add a lot of people. And then this year they have increased, and that's the bottom where you can see the month over month change in that second to last column. So making a little bit of progress.
A little bit, sure. Thank you, Fire.
Travel item is a standard item. There's, I think, two pages of classes here. If anybody wants to attend any of those, do a motion today, let us know, and we can have Sasha register you. The tech person, the NC class, starts with your question. Okay.
All right, Ryan. All right. Portfolio update. All right, so year-to-date through November, we're up 10.3% on the overall portfolio, up 15% on the public portfolio ex cash, which now makes up 77% of the total portfolio. A lot of our focus and Brenda's team's focus the last month has been on the custodian transition. We're moving from JP Morgan.
Quick question. Does that 77 reflect the last distribution that Ron was talking about?
Yeah, I mean, there were some distributions earlier in the year. So.
No, it sounded like there was an imminent one.
No, yeah, there's one that it's not going
to be. Oh, okay.
That has not come in the before year, it sounds like. And that excludes cash, we're actually like 80% cash. On the custodian transition, we're transitioning from JP Morgan to BNY on January 2nd. We're kind of getting everything set up, doing a lot of training, biweekly calls with both JP Morgan and BNY team. So moving full steam ahead there. On rebalancing, just with the new asset allocation that was approved, we lowered the EM equity, EM debt down by $30 million in early December towards the expected new targets that will kind of solidify in the public equity and public credit structure reviews coming up in Q1.
And then WCM, you'll see in a minute, their performance has been quite strong. So we trimmed $17.5 million from that portfolio and put it into the passive. So that stayed within public equity to the 6% target. Looking ahead at investment initiatives, I feel like 2024 was a lot of planning and putting stuff in place with updated investment policy, all board, getting them on board, custodian transition. So getting the private market processes in place. We're going to start the year with private credit pacing plan and strategy document to go to the IAC. We're going to look at long-term allocation to that asset class and what we want to do in 2025, 2026. We have a potential high yield search or credit search coming up. And then we're also going to discuss the public equity credit structure reviews in January. And then once we kind of get going on the private credit side, we're going to be looking at private equity and what we can and should do there for the year. Few market charts, just looking at S&P, obviously it's been on a tear this year, post-election, and this year. One interesting thing on this chart, if you look at the multiples on the P/E ratio board, it's been, you know, somewhat rich, you know, 22.2 now, but the difference between prior few periods there, 2020 to 2022, is rates are much higher now, so your cost of capital higher is still trading at very high multiple. This is looking at kind of just the continued theme that we've had the last decade plus on U.S. dominance of markets, but if you look at market cap weighting of our benchmark, which is the ACWI IMI, the U.S. is two-thirds of that benchmark, whereas it makes up 26% of the GDP of the same country. And then this is just looking, we've been tracking this since the drawdown that occurred in early 2022. We're at 3 years, just about 3 years post that now. Annualized returns on the U.S. market kind of in the 8% range for that 3 year period. And then kind of flat for European, negative for EM, and then kind of averaging that out with the weight we just looked at, actually IMI is up 4.6% annualized. But all the returns on this chart pretty much occurred in 2024. So looking at performance of our public portfolio, a few highlights. Like I said, WCM, you can look down at them year to date, they're up 40% compared to the benchmark, that's up 23.7%. So that was a new hire, and they've been, you know, very strong out of the gates. A few encouraging things, some of the managers that we had that were struggling a bit. Eastern Shore on the U.S. small cap side is outperforming by 500 basis points year to date. And then turn the page to Loomis, longer term, they're still underperforming, but they had that. 2024. So a lot of green on the fixed income page. On the equity page, we're slightly trailing on the 3 and 5 to the benchmark. That's kind of the U.S. underweight quality stance of our managers. And we were just talking for a meeting, I think there's a pretty sizable U.S. underweight in that portfolio, and he didn't talk more about it. But given that underweight and what the U.S. markets have done, I think it shows that we've had good stock selection across asset portfolios. Any questions here? All right, we ended the month at $2.045 billion in assets, $194 million this year in investment gains, $92 million in benefit outflows, which gets up to the estimated year-to-date return of just over 10%. This has been an important chart for us getting through the last 6+ years now. Private asset inflows have covered 90% outflows. We're at $68 million coming back on the private side year to date. Bulk of that has been from the private equity sales that occurred in Q3. Stake to reserve, we're healthy there, especially with the rebalancing we just did. So we're covered through July of 26. On benefit outflows, obviously that number will change a bit with the adoption of move to the ADC, so we'll reevaluate levels there once that gets kind of notified this year. This is just looking at a detail of the rebalancing, and then the highlighted cells on the right are what we expect the new targets to be. You guys remember we approved asset allocation, but and the investment policy for everything to be effective 2021-25 just for cleanness of the quarter rate. So these new targets in these reports will all look a little bit different in February when we do the portfolio update. So we got Makita to do the performance reports by phone, but any other questions generally for me or the team before we hand it over to them?
Just comment. Compliments to staff for, you know, tremendous execution and accomplishment in terms of the results.
Thank you.
Great.
Aaron, 2025, I'm looking forward to it. Anything I missed from our team? All right, I think the next item is actually the IAP reappoint. Okay, so there's five members. The IAP has got 2-year terms with no term limits. So we have currently 10 people on the IAP. 5 of those terms expire at the end of 2024. I reached out to talk to all 5 members, and they're all willing to be reappointed. And we have some interest in serving on the private market committee, so we'll get that all set up. But we recommend appointing Michael Brown, Tina, Gita Meyer, Robert Jones, and Jamil McNeil to additional 2-year terms.
I just want to point out that this next year in 2025, you know, in theory, for a private investment to come on the portfolio is an 8 out of 11 vote. So all the work that the investment team does goes through the IAC and then to our vote. So it's going to be an interesting process to see how this actually works, because I don't know how it works with a quorum and not a quorum, and if we have 7 people and then we can't get it through. I mean, these are the types of logistical challenges we're going to face in 2025. I just want to kind of underscore that.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be 8, no matter if it's not a super story. It's 8 for alternative investment. I think taking that first jump commitment on a private market investment will be interesting. It's been a number of years, but we'll get the process kind of going and evolve over time.
I think also that we'll have one vacancy, potentially others. I think there's a lot of good candidates for new trustees on that list as well. Tom, you concur?
Yes, sir.
All right.
I suspect those candidates are going to get better and better as the health of this fund, as this pension fund gets better and better. So let's be clear. It's the ones that do the heavy lifting after this.
I was just thinking of form issues with IAC. Work it out. All right, so we need a motion.
Okay. All right, so any other discussion?
Okay.
So the motion would be to reappoint IAC members to serve on the Investment Advisory Committee for 2-year terms ending 12/31/2026.
Make a motion.
Second? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, let's go to our friends at Makita. Leo and Colin, are you guys on?
Yes, and good morning, everyone. Can I hear as well?
Morning.
Morning, Leo.
Yep.
Hi. I don't know if you have any issues, but we can hear you. And just let me know.
You said you could be here as well?
We can hear you, Leo, and let me know. I'll click through the presentation for you, so just let me know what page you go to.
Yeah, let's just go to the first page with some data, like the 1-year flash summary. Yeah, thank you. So overall, and following along the comments from Brian, it has been a continuation of pretty strong market returns. And so the quarter as well as the year is a pretty strong one. So looking at the top line, the total fund returned just shy of 16% on an absolute basis when you compare against your assumed rate of return, that's very strong. So that's very helpful. You are lagging versus the policy benchmark, and that is pretty common for most of your peers as well, as private markets have lagged versus public equities. And it all depends also on the choice of your benchmark. If your benchmark is the median private equity return, full return, that's different than if you have a public equity benchmark plus a spread. That's what we have. And so when we have a year when the stock market is rallying, a year when in the U.S., 57 trading days, the S&P 500 hit new highs, that's roughly, 20-25% of the trading days. You know, it's tough to keep up with that. Versus peers on the third row, you're close. And the difference might be attributed to slight changes or differences in target allocations as well as performance within those illiquid assets. You are underweight public equity versus your targets. So that explains when you look at attribution, what is, a headwind. You have a target and you're below because you're overweight private equity, and so there's got to be some corresponding offsetting, and that is the underweight to mostly the index fund that you have. If you look at the bottom half, it looks pretty good, and if you recall a few pages back from Brian's presentation, looking as of November 30th, a lot of green. So generally speaking, your publicly traded managers are doing well. So the majority is outperforming versus benchmarks, peers, et cetera. Things are looking out well, and recent performance is quite solid. We move on to the next page. We have the bridge chart, a pretty standard page, but you can see again it's been a good quarter with over $90 million in gains in value added to the fund. We can skip two pages until we go to the manager scorecard. And here we just look at manager versus the assigned benchmarks that we gave them. And what you'll see is that the three of the global equity managers have no ratings because they are behind the benchmarks. The benchmarks are core benchmarks for these managers. And recall that we have both value and growth. So when we look later at the manager-by-manager ranking, you will see that your value-based, value managers, Boston Partners and Manulife, are actually doing quite well, both ranking roughly around the top quartile for performance over different time periods and pretty much consistently outperforming their peers, other global value managers. WCM has less than a year, but it started off very strongly. Walter Scott is the only one that has been lagging versus peers, and that is explained again by their more conservative growth posture in the market when growth has really been driving returns. So no concerns for us. I just wanted to explain for a moment, the prevalence of no seer, it's a bit misleading because of the way that we are measuring against theory core benchmarks. The fixed income portfolio is pretty strong. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just curious that we have 12 managers, active managers on the public side. How does that compare to other pension plans around our size in terms of manager roster and the size of it?
I would say it's within the realm of reasonability and normal ranges. I don't view it as being too many or too few. I think it is within range for, a fund of your size with an investment team of your size, et cetera. So I think it is, within close to medium, if you will, and not an outlier.
Okay.
Leo, it's Tina. I know you
yes,
said
Tina.
That. You said some of these managers that their underperformance may, and the recent underperformance is reflected more like growth or value. Can you contribute maybe like not as an aggressive allocation to the U.S. markets versus other markets as another contributing factor or no?
Well, we can go into the next page as it touches on that. And my initial answer would be not really. So you can see that, for example, your two value managers, Boston Partners and Manulife, have very different postures with respect to the U.S. Boston Partners, only a 29% weight. Manulife, 63%. You'll see that the market is roughly 60%. So most of your managers, of your four global managers, three are equal or greater in the U.S. Uh-huh. Boston Partners is meaningfully lower. But if you were to look at performance for Boston Partners and Manulife, they're both doing well. They're both above respective value benchmarks and ahead of, 75% of peers with very different postures, which means it's driving performance, from the bottom up by picking good managers as opposed to good companies as opposed to, being heavily allocated to the U.S. or not. Don't forget that the strong performance in the U.S. has been really concentrated, driven by Magnificent Seven type stocks. And those tend to be growth-oriented companies. So on the value side, this hasn't been that tremendous a disparity of performance from one set of holdings to another one. And so it's been more evenly distributed.
Got it.
This is just a snapshot in time. So the underweight to the U.S., once we added WCM, the overweight increased, and then Manulife has been increasing their allocation. They were underweight a couple years ago, another market weight. So it's, I think maybe
correct.
When you... It's a 3 and 5 year history, more so than kind of the current
fair
point
enough.
In time.
Yeah, for Boston Partners, this is the smallest U.S. holdings that I remember seeing. So they've been training the opposite way. They've been maybe sticking to their deeper value philosophy. Okay, it's getting more expensive. We're moving away from it. And some of the others are seeing relative value in some U.S. holdings. And so... Overall, I think this is within the realm. That's why we pay these managers to make these decisions. So let's look into performance on the next couple of pages. We have some charts. The first one, I would say short term, less than a year, a lot of headwinds, primarily due to the underweight in global equities, in listed equities, and the overweight in illiquid assets that have, generally speaking, been pretty flattish in terms of performance. So that really accounts that lag for periods shorter than a year. The 3 year looks quite strong versus our own policy, versus peers, et cetera. And then as you go into 10 years, that's when the impact from those legacy, larger at the time, weights that we had really cost the fund. But I would say for periods 3 years and shorter, pushing into five, the performance has looked better. It's approaching that of our peer set. The next two pages look at attribution, and you'll see one solid green line going left at 3 months and also at 1 year, and that again is private equity versus performance, and it's been nothing like the public equities, and so it shows left, meaning it's been a headwind. So nothing new. You've seen this in past years. What is interesting is to look at the 3 year risk return chart versus peers, which follows on the next page. And so you see your green square that is the fund. And, these are actual returns, including all assets. And, it looks pretty well compared to peers for this time period. We then move into manager-by-manager performance. We start on the next page. At the top, you'll see performance of the fund, net of fees across different benchmarks. We have a policy index. We have the benchmark that excludes private markets. We have a more naive 60-40 benchmark. And generally speaking, you see you know, for periods 3 years and lower, I think the fund is doing quite well, notwithstanding the lag recently due to the very strong rally in the U.S. equity markets. If you skip two pages, we look at managers, and I want to just highlight a few of them. So let's start towards the bottom of the page with a WCM, that is your newer manager, less than a year with the fund, but started off quite well, generating gains of 28.8%, about 6 percentage points ahead of benchmark and among the better ones within its peer set. This is a manager that is, I would qualify it as being your higher octane growth manager compared to a more quality growth approach with Walter Scott. And so you'll see Walter Scott just above it. They had been performing well for a while, the last, number of quarters. That performance has, lagged the last year or two. And so as a result, time periods longer than 3 years begin to look more median-like. The 3 years still looks attractive. No concerns. We've been monitoring this manager, and, we have a decent number of exposure across this manager. And, we understand that this performance is not surprising to us. The Boston Partners of Manulife are at the bottom of this page and the beginning of the next one. So if you start with Boston Partners, recall with a 29 current weight to U.S. Versus the world benchmark, you'll see the lag. But I'm looking at 1 year or shorter periods. But, over longer periods, getting closer to that global benchmark. And if you look at the rank versus other value managers, and I would just look at not at all equity managers, just looking at value, they've consistently done quite well. So short-term, ranking around 35th percentile, longer-term, ranking around 20th percentile. And on the next page, we start with Manulife. Very similar for about year-to-date and 1 year, ranking about 30th percentile. And as you move all the way to inception, ranking at the 14th percentile. So very different exposures now. At times in the past, they look a little bit more similar, but they have, again, a differentiated methodology and process to deploy capital in more value-oriented companies, but both doing quite well since you retain them in both strategies. The one that is really struggling has been Global Alpha, and now Mikita and the staff have been having dialogues about this manager. It's still relatively a short horizon. We're talking less than 3 years. But, it started out by lagging its benchmark by about 4 percentage points per year on average. So that's not ideal. On the other hand, Eastern Shore, who also started with a bit of a headwind over the last year, performance has picked up for them. So you'll see strong performance over the last year or so. RBC, your sole emerging markets equity manager, performing generally well, no concerns with them. And then all of your fixed income managers are doing quite well. Loomis had been the one that we had been looking for a while. So if we skip over one more page, we'll look into that. But Loomis had a strong quarter, if you will, that really helped improve year-to-date and one-year numbers versus benchmark and peers. All your other managers have really been performing according to expectations of no concerns with income research or Longfellow, your bank loan managers, and your emerging markets manager. So overall, very solid performance from your public markets strategies. And we will end the comments that I have. When we look at asset allocation, we have a creation trend, and we have another page that, essentially attests that all your allocations are within your policy statement ranges, which they are. So with that, I will pause and see if you have any questions about your public markets report before we jump into your private markets report. So let's go to the private markets report. I will just highlight the first four or five pages, which essentially serves as the executive summary highlighting what's changed from one quarter to the other. Looking at the first page, you'll see limited activity. During the quarter, and this is, again, lags by one quarter, so we're looking at the second quarter of the calendar year. So from April 1 through June 30th, distributions were $7 million, which, as you can see, came primarily from Lone Star vehicles. And the NAV decreased by 9 collectively. 7 of that 9 is distributions, and 2 has been essentially declining valuations for some of the holdings. So overall, very limited portfolio activity. The return impact is 40 basis points. Obviously, when you compare that with a rising stock market on a relative basis, you know, it looks weak. On an absolute basis, it's a de minimis change in value. So what we'll do next is we'll look at each of your categories, starting with private equity. We'll look at credit, infrastructure, and such to see where the changes took place. On this next page, you'll see private equity. That's where you got the distributions again from the Lone Star vehicles and no change in valuation. And so the quarterly return for private equity is 0. On real estate, no distributions, a very slight $1 million adjustment to NAV for a quarterly return of 60 basis points. Moving over to the next page, page 80 in the bottom. Infrastructure, again, no activity. And agriculture is the one where we had a markdown of about $3 million on the portfolio from 79 to 76, resulting in a 3.8% adjustment. And the last page has timber again with no activity. This is you know, the smaller of your portfolios. So the rest of the presentation is pretty standard. You have seen it before. It still holds the same list of assets, the same history in terms of commitment, values, et cetera. Not much has changed. So in the interest of time, I don't plan to cover those. But if you have any questions, let me know. We will try to address them.
Yeah, I would like to just turn to two pages, John. If you could go to page 89, 15 of 28. Yeah, you all heard me use the phrase time theft when I talk about that, you know, capital that should be compounding over time with, you know, some variability. When I look here and I see that on these are the ones we still have outstanding, the TVPI, the second from the far right, which means that we've, for every dollar we've put in, we have extracted, or we believe there's fair market value remaining of $1.04, and the DPI is the amount distributed, so it's a little bit more than half. When you look at the vintage year on all these things, and you see, you know, I'm guessing on average, if I had to come up with an average one, it's probably 2008, 2010. So we're talking about 15 years of compounding at less than 1%. That's time theft. And then it's even, you know, it's illustrated as well. If you go, John, to page 100, 26 of 28. Now, I do, Ryan or Makita, I would like to see an IRR on this that we don't on the bottom.
So this is the, these are all the investments. This is the real estate side.
Here we go.
Yeah, so this page is all the completed investments on private equity, and this is kind of real estate. This is the last Makita report on the private market side. Allborn's taken over.
Okay.
All right. What they're going to have.
Okay, that's fine.
They'll have that. It's very detailed.
But once again, the point here is that for all the things that we monetized out of for a dollar invested, we lost 5 cents.
And so, once again, you think about time theft and that you have sequestered large amounts of capital that, due to poor decision-making, did not compound at any rate of return at all. When people, you know, want to push back and talk about things, and I like to point to evidence, I like to point to objective charts and objective statistics when we draw subjective conclusions. Like when I talk about that this has been a salvage operation for the private assets, I'm looking at covering our negative deficit with the cash we've generated. But these charts right here, the ones that we've exited and those that we still have, to me, are a huge part of the story that is part of our legacy. And we own that track record. But if people say, you know, they want to criticize how we do things now, I'll live with criticism about current allocations, about benchmarks, about decisions we didn't make or whatever. But when we talk about the legacy that we inherited, these two charts objectively speak to it really well. So I just wanted to point that out because I saw them here and just continue to reemphasize, you know, objective data for what I've been talking about over multiple years.
As we move over to the all board reporting, this history will be included in the composite global history, and we plan to have, like, as we initiate new private equity, we'll have subcomposites for historical, and then new, so we can have a clear track record on what we're doing at 2025 and forward.
Anything else?
Leo?
No, not for me.
All right. Thank you. I know it's early on the West Coast.
Hey, no worries. Happy to help and join in. It's good to talk to you. Wishing you all happy holidays. Look forward to seeing you in 2025.
All right.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Bye-bye.
Okay, now we go to item C15. I hate doing this, but I hate having to do this because of what's behind it, but I'm very joyful in honoring Mark. He's retiring at the end of the month, end of the year, and he has served incredibly well. What I've always liked about Mark is that he always had his own opinion, spoke his truth, but at the same time, he was a problem solver, not a problem creator. So a lot of times when people come at things a little differently at times, they create more problems than they solve. And Mark, you're just the opposite. You know, you were a total team player, but you brought a fresh perspective and a high degree of respect for you, and we'll miss you and wish you the best going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything and your support.
Absolutely. I was one that was very vocal about some of the changes that occurred when you came on. I will be the first to admit that you've been an additional value add tremendously. So.
Well, good luck to the fund. It's nice being working with public who want to serve the public. I think we're in good hands now. We always were for the last 5 years, as far as I'm concerned. But it's good to see where we're going.
Good. Well, all the hard work's been done, so it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Thank you.
Now we're going to go into Josh's favorite time, closed session.